Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Hi. Thanks for watching.
The abbreviated intro today. We do not have a guest. I am intrigued. Before we get started, recording on a Monday morning, which means you will hear this or watch this on Tuesday. So just wanted to very quickly say happy Christmas Eve to those who celebrate. In general, a happy holidays to everyone. Hope this time is filled with love for you. And we hope you enjoy the time off if you have it. You know, spend some time with your peoples. Enjoy yourselves. Enjoy each other. But heading into today's show, going to be a relatively smooth and simple slate. We are going to get into some all-star talk. All-star voting opened up a few days ago, so get some early thoughts on who's a candidate, who should be a starter, etc. How many people are on the bubble for us, all that good stuff. I am guaranteed to annoy at least one dunker, so we're going to have some fun with that one. I'm prepared to get yelled at. And then we're going to preview the Christmas Day slate. We've got 5 games, 10 teams, so we'll talk about what we're going to look for in those games and just some general thoughts about the teams involved. So going to have some fun today. Let's get into some all-star talk. Steve, as I was trying to put rosters together, I gave myself a literal headache. So probably not the best sign for how much thought I put into this. As I generally do for the new people that are here, I am very much a how much have you played stickler to kind of cut down some of my list. I think as of Monday morning, league average for games played across the league is about 28. So sticking with like the award threshold, 65 games, that's about 79% of total games. So I was looking at a minimum of 22 games played for the players on my list that cut out some pretty big names. And so like I do have like secondary teams like, hey, this person's probably going to make it anyway. So this is what I think. But games played minimum is going to be in effect. So some big names going to be cut out for me. Steve, you want to start East or do you want to start West?
Dealer's choice. I say we go with the Western Conference.
Okay, well, let's start with the Western Conference because, good Lord, deep player pool. We've talked a lot about what the standings look like, and any winning or losing streak just jets you up like 3 spots or drops you 3 spots at this point. And the player pool is no different. There are so many star, not just star level talents, like legitimate superstar level talents that can be on the fringes. Like for me personally, because of games played, just the automatic cutout there. But it's some interesting positional battles. Like the guard room is incredibly deep in the West. The front court certainly is deep. And depending on how much you index on games or index on winning records, I know everyone has their own criteria for this kind of thing. You can get yourself into some pretty tough decisions. I guess I will start with my starting 5. Again, utilizing, I think, minimum 22 games played for me. That currently has Luka Doncic out as he's played 20 as of Monday morning. Ja Morant has only played 17. And so 2 guys that I would heavily consider currently out right now. Now, I do also live in reality, so I know fan vote, et cetera. And ultimately, if they stay healthy, they're going to end up qualifying anyway. Luka Doncic has been an MVP caliber player. He's going to make the All-Star team. I think he's also level talent, et cetera.
Hot start. There are 5 people who stopped listening to you as soon as you said Luka Doncic is off the list. There's a comment on YouTube, and probably there's someone in a car screaming at you. I hope you know that.
That's fine. Like, I don't have an official media ballot, so it doesn't matter at the end of the day. And ultimately, like, it did present, like, an interesting thought exercise to me. Like, hey, if I do drop one of the very, very obvious names, like, what does the rest of it look like? Kind of helps sort out, like, the bubble for me. Because, again, Luka's just going to make it, and I think he should and will, assuming that he stays healthy. I do think it is worth noting for the actual award stuff. The fact that Luka's missed this much time early on, if there is like an ankle tweak in January or anything like that, we may end up having some legit uncomfortable discussions about award stuff with Luka, despite how well he's played. So it's worth keeping that in the back of mind. Like, obviously, again, for All-Star, it doesn't actually matter. But if I am using my own self-imposed limit, my starting backcourt would be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Anthony Edwards right now. Starting front court for me, I have Jokic, because why wouldn't I have Jokic? I have Anthony Davis right now. And I have Victor Wembanyama as my 3rd front court player right now. I love the face from Steve.
No LeBron James, no Kevin Durant, huh?
LeBron's on the team, so his name's going to be said very shortly. Kevin Durant, as of Monday morning, 17 games played, same as Ja Morant.
I mean, I think there is intrigue in the West front court if you're looking to vote. I think Jokic is in. Anthony Davis is healthy and having a very good year, which means instead of being able to do the Jokic, KD, LeBron stamp, there's some intrigue. LeBron's LeBron, KD's KD. They've both been very good, and Victor's just over there averaging 24 and 10. So it's intriguing.
It is 25, 10, and 4 for Victor Wembanyama. A steal, nearly 4 blocks per game. If you care about EPM, he's third among West players overall in EPM. He's put together a Defensive Player of the Year caliber season. The Spurs are winning his minutes right now, which is not a thing that can be said about LeBron as an example right now. Obviously, that can change as the season goes on. I do think to your general point. I have a
question before you continue. This win the minutes thing, what's that mean?
Like in a literal sense, or what do you mean?
Yeah, like what's it mean? How do we balance out which minutes he's winning?
Oh, I mean, you can obviously go into like first quarter minutes, second quarter minutes, et cetera. You can go sort by lineup and stuff. You can get as deep into that as much as you want. Just as a general note, is your team outscoring the other team when you're on the floor?
Out blowouts?
You can. Like, you know, I am a clean in the glass truther. So, like, in that, in that essence, like, yes.
Does it take out bad teams?
If you want to do that kind of filtering, you can. Like, these are tools that exist.
I'm just curious. We always say someone's winning their minutes. And I'm like, well, yeah, if they just played the Wizards and Pistons and they dominated, sure, they're going to win their minutes. I don't know what that means.
No, I understand. I absolutely understand your general point in all series. But, like, yeah.
Continue.
Okay, you're good. But, no, like, I think with most star players, like, they generally have that kind of impact. They generally win their minutes. Like, it's kind of a thing that's baked in. And obviously, when the numbers look wonky, like, there is always going to be some level of context to be had. Like, for an example, one of the AD versus LeBron swings that I looked at, and it's easy to investigate a little bit deeper. The general trend with LeBron teams and LeBron plus inter star, you know, teammate here is LeBron's going to win the minutes when it's him plus the second unit or whatever. And the co-star generally struggles without LeBron on the floor. This year is a very rare one in which that's been flipped. As of Monday morning, the Lakers with a plus 2.7 net rating with Anthony Davis on the floor without LeBron James. And LeBron with a minus 9.7 net rating in the minutes without Anthony Davis. That is not a thing that generally happens. And then you look over, like literally a tab, teams are shooting 29% from three in the Brown minutes. And they're shooting 38% in the LeBron minutes. As great of a defender as Anthony Davis is, he is not a 9 percentage point swing in terms of opponent 3-point percentage. Like, that's generally a random thing. So, like, is that something that I'm going to heavily hold over LeBron's head or anything like that? Like, no. Because you can easily find that context.
Okay.
So, to your point, like, I don't think you should just look minutes, there's your answer, that's it. Like, there's always context to these things. And ultimately, you got to watch the games in addition to looking at these numbers. Like, that should be baked in for anyone doing that kind of analysis.
Okay. The Anthony Edwards case?
Just in general?
Yeah.
I would like for the defense to remain more consistent, but offensively, he is thriving within a very tough offensive context and a lot of change around him. I think the three-point shooting has been very important. When he has gotten to the rim, it has been generally good stuff. But rim pressure, rim rate ultimately down because of the context. He's talked a little bit about the help that he's seen. But I do think he's had a very good year overall. And ultimately, again, if we're doing the games play thing, like that would just be the Luka spot. And I don't have to say anything else. But after that, it's like the hodgepodge of Anthony Edwards versus Kyrie versus Steph versus James Harden versus De'Aaron Fox versus Devin Booker. Like, it's a whole conglomerate of guards that you can cycle through here.
Okay. Would you like me to give my starters?
Yes.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic, Anthony Davis, and LeBron James.
Seems pretty straightforward. There you go. Was it just, I guess, like LeBron versus KD is like your toughest selection on the front court?
Pretty much.
Okay. Understood. All right, let's get into the bench / the wild card selections. Think 2 backcourt, 3 front court, and then 2 wild cards. Would you like to give those first, or do you want me to go?
Go ahead and give yours first, because I'm not sure where you went.
Okay, fair enough. All right, backcourt for me, I have Kyrie Irving and Stephen Curry right now. Front court, naturally, LeBron James still there. I have Jaren Jackson Jr. and Jalen Williams as my two other front court guys. And then with the wild card, we have Domantas Sabonis. And the other wild card is where I was just in a headlock. I mentioned all those guards. I have James Harden as the final wild card right now. But that's one of those things that can flip literally by the end of the week, as these are a bunch of guards that are just bunched in together.
Did Alperen Şengün fall victim to the games played?
He did not. He is in the honorable mentions list for me. Wow. He's also had a very good season.
Wow. That's surprising.
It's one of those, like, because the defense has been better. We know what kind of playmaking he can do. He's a really good post threat. Like, the finishing has just been uncharacteristic of him so far this year, and that just kind of brings the overall efficiency for him down. Like, that feels like something that will correct itself. I do think overall he's played very well. He's been huge in fourth quarters for Houston. Again, he has been part of the defensive growth for this Houston Rockets team. They've sustained the defense they put up last year. So I don't think he's far off from this conversation at all.
The Jaren Jackson Jr., Alperen Şengün debate gets very interesting.
It does.
And so I'll reveal my bench. Stephen Curry and Ja Morant for me in the backcourt. I had Kevin Durant, Victor Wembanyama. I had Alperen Şengün in the front court.
That's fair.
And my wild cards, James Harden and Domantas Sabonis. So here's the thing, right? Say what you want about Sabonis. It's 20, 10, and 6 assists on 60% shooting. It's only him and Giannis doing that. Like, I don't make the rules. That's very good. I'm sorry. James Harden has been very, very good for the Clippers. You want to talk about an offensive context? He is the offensive context.
That he is.
So I'll put that there. Where it gets tricky, Jaren Jackson Jr. has been very good this year. You can quibble about the rebounding, maybe the defense at times, but he's been very good. Şengün's been very good for a team. It's very good as well. They're neck and neck. Kyrie Irving is someone I had down. As someone I was like, yeah, Kyrie's in. He's been cooking. And I was like, wait a minute. I don't know if the numbers are going to support this at the end of the day. Doesn't feel like an Anthony Edwards year. Not that he hasn't done the talent thing. De'Aaron Fox was in my mind, but I couldn't get there. You know, there's a lack of the DeMars, the Bookers, the Jamal Murrays. Norman Powell, so sorry you're in the Western Conference. Jalen Williams was in my mind, but I was like, I don't know if he leaps over either of the other bigs. And then, like, who's left? Zubac?
Yeah, like, Zub's going to fall below this threshold. I'm not, at least not without, like, other injuries or, like, significant drop-off from other people. This is very much a salute. We see how good you've been this year. I don't know if you get to that tier. I do kind of feel for, like, I'm really curious to see where the Devin Booker case ends up going. Because the role slash usage has shifted a little bit for him as Mike Budenholzer's come in, and because he's also had to deal with KD's here, then he isn't, Bill's here, then he isn't, it's like he's been very good. It hasn't felt like his usual brand of good. And like, just quickly, like the efficiency overall is down for him this year. But like, that very much feels like roster shifting around him, even to the front court, where you have Nurk and you don't have Nurk. Like, Nurk is one of the best screeners in the league. And a lot of Devin Booker on the baseline, Nurk sets a screen in the middle of the floor. Like, when that's a different big, that may affect the kind of openings that he's getting, for example. If he's running high pick and roll, may affect some of the openings that may be there to make the playmaking pop or to, you know, open up windows for those pull-ups and stuff like that. So, like, I haven't changed my opinion of Booker as a player. I do wonder how voters are going to treat his all-star case, at least up until now. But we do just have another month plus for this to shift.
Yeah, it gets interesting. But, you know, there's no Gobert, Markkanen, Ingram type beats this year.
Yeah.
Also, Şengün, 18, 10, and 5. It's just him, Sabonis, Jokic, Giannis, and Jalen Johnson doing that. Just throwing it out there.
No, Şengün's been very good. Like, I think Şengün versus Jaren, like, we've talked about Memphis a little bit on the pod so far this year. Like, Jaren, over the past year and a half, honestly, the growth for him as a scorer, I think, has been very important. And now you add, at least occasionally, Ja Morant back into the fold, Desmond Bane back in the fold. When you have those three on the floor together, you kind of get to see the full breadth of Jaren can roll, Jaren can pop, Jaren can just isolate, Jaren can get a quick seal, get a quick bucket for you. Jaren can just walk, dribble into a post-up sometimes if he wants to and wiggle his way into the rim. I think him being able to self-create to that degree, you see the three-point shooting perk back up. The defense hasn't been up to where his defensive player of the year season was. And like even that had like a air of like controversy around it. Controversy is probably too strong. A little bit of questioning about it, considering some other candidates. But I don't think it's been quite that. It hasn't been the same volume of fouls for Jaren this year. I do think he is still quite good at the rim. When they ask him to switch, he's able to sit down and hold up relatively well. So like I think the two-way impact has been pretty strong on a really good Memphis team. Obviously, Şengün also on a good Rockets team. And for their offense to be flirting with top 10, despite the half-court offense not being there, like he's been such an important fulcrum for them. And again, the one nitpick that I have with Şengün offensively is that he's just kind of underperforming what he normally does in the paint. And that is something that I think will just turn back around. And if it does, like I have no problem with him getting a wild card or a front court spot because he has just been good overall. He's got to kind of split hairs elsewhere.
So who are you taking off?
If I'm putting Şengün in, like I'd probably look at one of the front court players.
Feet to the fire, who?
Feet to the fire. Honestly, maybe it's not. Like I think he takes the wild card spot. Like maybe it's him versus James. Like the one nitpick with James would probably just be the efficiency right now. He's had the shoulder and incredible load. But like compared to the other all-stars on the list, he is towards the bottom of that list, even if the context makes that understandable. So like that would be a place to nitpick. And if the Clippers slide at all, then he also loses some of the record stuff that he has. But I guess that's where I would start with that thought.
Jaren Jackson Jr. shooting very well, by the way.
He is.
40% from three for the month of December. I think it's probably been the most assertive he's been offensively. Mm-hmm. I think we've had the skill set. He showcased pieces of it, but night in, night out, you know what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's an easy one to debate on.
I understand.
If you're watching on YouTube, comment with your biggest snub.
There you go. I think I know who's going to be for mine at the very least. If I did not have the games played marker, then it is just Shai, Luka, Wimby, Brow, Jokic as the starters. I would have Kyrie and Ja as my backcourt. KD obviously would be in. KD's in, Bron's in, Jaren's in, Jalen Williams be a wild card, and I probably still had Domantas Sabonis. So we'd be knocking off a guard in this case. But
so Stephen Curry wouldn't be an all-star?
Which would be incredibly tough.
Wait. So Jalen Williams would be an all-star over Stephen Curry?
I really appreciate what Jalen's done on both ends. I do think like he has been a good and versatile scorer for most of the season. We have seen some of those shortcomings pop up during cut play, but overall, it's been a very good season on all three levels. Defensively, especially once all the centers went down, the work that he did was kind of incredible. Like he's been tasked with guarding a bunch of folks. Obviously, as Hartenstein's come back, it's been less of the like I have to defend fives, but he's still been very good defensively this year. I think Jalen should be an all-star this year.
Over Stephen Curry?
I can make the case.
What are the Warriors without Stephen Curry?
Not that good.
The defense rests.
That's part of the... Yeah, just kidding. But no, that's... Hey.
Wow, okay. I did not
I have broken Steve today.
This man doubled down on LeBron James is not an all-star starter and Stephen Curry is not an all-star. I don't know where we're going. Dude, do you want to go out east?
Yeah, we head out east. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. Would you like to start?
Nope.
Okay, fair enough then. We'll start out east with the starters. Again, 22 games played minimum for me. That would immediately rule out Jimmy Butler, who's been very good. Tyrese Maxey, who's also been very good in some tough circumstances with all the injury woes in Philly right now. LaMelo Ball has also played 20 games, which I think that would be like bench slash wild card conversation for me anyway, but he would be eliminated under this context. For me, Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell in the backcourt. Jason Tatum, Giannis, and Karl-Anthony Towns in the front court.
I think you can stamp the front court in the Eastern Conference. I think it will be Giannis Antetokounmpo, Jason Tatum, and Karl-Anthony Towns.
That's easy.
No disrespect to Joel Embiid, you have not played enough. Point the backcourt for me, I have my four guards locked in. I changed the order a million times. I settled on Trae Young and Donovan Mitchell.
Okay.
What does your bench look like?
You are already well. First, before we go there, who was the second guard for you in the starters? Because you said you switched the order around. So, like, who ended up being the toughest swap for you?
All of them. I started with Dame and Jalen Brunson. Then I ended up at Trae Young and Donovan Mitchell. I got to every combination.
Fair enough. All right, we'll have a deeper guard discussion as we get through the bench.
Well, I mean, here's the thing: Dame and Jalen have literally almost the same stat line to a degree. Mm-hmm. They're both very good. They both have to carry a lot for both their offenses. Trae Young is doing incredible things, and Donovan Mitchell is spearheading the best team in the league, some would say. So,
yeah. The 23-5-5 for Donovan Mitchell, and he's playing 31 minutes. He's got to sit some fourths because of what Cleveland's been able to do. But to my second unit, I have Damian Lillard. I have Cade Cunningham in the backcourt. In the front court, Jaylen Brown, Franz Wagner, Evan Mobley. My two wild cards right now, Trae Young and Darius Garland. Steve is processing my roster.
Okay. Give me the front court again.
I got Jaylen Brown, got Franz Wagner, got Evan Mobley.
Okay.
I guess to be more specific, I have Franz with the asterisk since he's out. And so, so depending on how long he's going to be out, then obviously that would affect, if we're going through the games played exercise at the very least. Okay. And if he's just genuinely not available, then even if the coaches get him in, then I got to select someone else anyway. So I have Franz. He's played well enough. But because he's out and don't know how long he's going to be out, I am, prepared to swap someone else into the front court if necessary.
I'm very stunned. I have Damian Lillard and Jalen Brunson.
Okay.
I have Jaylen Brown, Jalen Johnson, and Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. And I have Cade Cunningham and Evan Mobley.
Hmm.
I thought you would be chief Jalen Johnson all-star.
Hey, Steve.
You went to the other Jalen.
Jalen Brown's been very good. I think Jalen Johnson would just legit be the Franz replacement for me, though.
I mean, Jalen Williams.
Hey, get all the Jalens in the All-Star game, I guess is the actual bit. Well, maybe not all of them, but let's get most of the Jalens in the All-Star game.
Shout out to the Makers. Yep. Hello?
No shot. No freaking shot.
So what was your toughest cut?
Man, I think similar to you, cycling through all of the guards, I think in the West, like I mentioned, was it Booker, Fox, Shingun was an honorable mention for me as well. The East, I had a much longer list in terms of players that I thought about. And that's before getting into, again, no Maxi, no LaMelo, no Jimmy Butler, just because of the games played thing. In alphabetical order, the guys that I had on the list, Bam, he has perked up as of late, but he's ultimately not going to get there. I don't think it's been consistent all-star production for him. Jared Allen, another Cav. I tossed out the OG Anunoby question to you, a couple weeks ago when we talked about the Knicks. So OG Anunoby was someone that I thought about. Tyler Hero was someone that I thought about. I think, again, combination of games / consistency, he's probably the Heat that should make an all-star team if there's going to be one. Because of the positional breakdown, he's just in the group with Mitchell and Brunson and Lillard and Cade and Trey and Garland, et cetera. So I don't think Hero gets in. Bam or Jimmy probably have the best chance just because the front court pool isn't as deep as it normally would be because of injuries. But Hero has played very well. Jalen Johnson, again, if Franz is out, Jalen's just my front court replacement. He's had a very good season for Atlanta. Zach LaVine, another guy that I thought about, but again, deep guard class, et cetera. Pascal Siakam, especially as Tyrese Halliburton was getting himself together in the first portion of the season. Pascal carried quite a load. Haven't loved the defense for most of the season, though, so that kind of drops it, but it has still been an efficient 21-7-4, whatever it is. Nikola Vucevic, someone I had down. He is shooting the leather off of the ball. Defense TBD. Derek White was the other guy that I had at least thought about. As he's also shot pretty well. Defense been very good.
Dang, no love for the Nikias All-Stars, Cam Johnson and Mikal Bridges?
No. Cam's very good. I couldn't get to, like, French All-Star for Cam Johnson. And Mikal, I can't quite get there with Mikal. Like, it's notable that the defense has felt better. It still hasn't been all defense level, at least in my opinion. I'll let Nick fans yell at me about that if I'm just wrong on that. But at least in my watching, hasn't felt that way. The shooting, I still kind of chuckle at how overblown the, like, early struggles were for him. And, like, he's done a decent enough job filling gaps. He's been darn near automatic in the mid-range this year. It's good. I can't get quite to, like, I think OG would be the wing that I would make the argument for over Mikal this year if I was going to do another Nick.
Okay. I had a tough time. Like, one, it felt weird not having a Magic player on there. I wonder if Franz does sneak in. But I feel like that would have to be from the media to a degree. And I don't know how big that hits. I had most of the players you listed on that. I had a thought about Porzingis. The backcourt, like LaMelo Ball, it was hard to leave him off. It basically came down to LaMelo versus Cade to a degree, which gets very funny. But it's a numbers game. Like, in theory, if those are the four guards, and there's always a curveball becomes all-star. There's always someone who gets voted in and everything kind of slides from there. But if, in theory, those four guards are there, there's only two spots. And you end up battling with the front court player. And so I don't imagine the Cavs only get one all-star. I don't think they get three. Mm-hmm. But I don't see where they only get one. And that's where it's like, okay, do we go with LaMelo's outstanding volume and output and fourth quarter play? Or, you know, Cade's almost triple-double doing something that not many people are doing every single night. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I lead toward Cade. Tyler Herro, I think, is going to be a victim of the numbers game. I don't think it's a Halliburton year, although he's turning things around.
That is.
Maxey. It's going to be a very 90s all-star year for Tyrese Maxey. Very throwback. Like Mitch Richmond's cooking, but I ain't won no games type beat.
Yeah, like I feel for Tyrese. Because I do feel like he's genuinely, even if all the efficiency numbers may not reflect it, like, I do feel like he's gotten better from last year.
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. We're ignoring Tyrese Maxey's efficiency numbers?
No, I'm not ignoring it.
I don't know. I want to hear the same efficiency hammer for Tyrese Maxey.
I mean, he didn't make it for me either way.
I still want to hear it.
Well, you know.
you just hammered Şengün for efficiency. I want to hear the same thing.
Well, you know, Tyrese Maxey inside the... No, it's been a tough context for Tyrese, but I do feel like some of the process stuff's got better. I've enjoyed the passing that he's been having to put together in light of some of the coverage that he's seen this year. But again, like, he's at 20 games right now. So that's where I didn't have him. Like, I think it gets a lot tougher if I include those three, especially since it's not like, again, like John the West, it was 17, you need 22. These guys are only two games off, and LaMelo, Jimmy, and Tyrese. Like, I think that would significantly disrupt what my roster would look like because of how they've been. Like, LaMelo versus, honestly, like, you mentioned, how far were you off on Darius Garland? I guess I'll start there. You said you don't think they get three. Like, is it just these other guards and then Darius, we also see you?
It's less his fault and more the numbers game than anything else.
Okay.
But he's been very, very good. But so have they.
I understand. So I guess, like, free throw adjacent, like Garland or Herro, whose case do you feel better about?
Whose case do I feel better about seeing Garland, Herro?
Yeah.
I think they have even ones. It just depends on what you value. I mean, you could say Darius Garland is scoring and having to play make at a very high level, operating at a very high pace, having to hold up defensively, and you can feel good about that. Mm-hmm. Also point to Tyler Herro having to get a whole bunch of buckets and growing playmaking wise and being a volume shooter and value that. I think they are in a position where they might end up canceling each other out to a degree.
Okay. Understood.
I mean, if you get stuck on that and LaMelo's averaging 33, well, you know.
That's a lot of points.
Okay, gets up to like 9 and 8, you know? But hey.
The Cade season has just been, I guess, mostly a joy. You factor in some of the turnovers, but like, he's been incredible this year. And I'm glad that he's having, I'm glad he's getting this season, like, just adding a little bit more shooting to the room. What that can do for Cade Cunningham. There's always going to be high handoffs or high pick and rolls with him. He just snakes, gets to the middle of the floor, and he's just sprinkling in pull-ups whenever he wants. And then also now taking the extra dribble more consistently to get all the way to the rim. I think there's room for him to get to the line more, and I don't think all of that is his fault. I will leave that there. But I've enjoyed the interior craft from Cade. I always have. It's annoyed me while watching him try to navigate it earlier in his career just because of how restricted the space was. But seeing that open up a little bit more, seeing the shot making perk up the way it has, it's really been a joy. Like, it's, you've talked a lot about how fun Detroit has been this year as they've played a lot of good teams tough, have beaten some solid teams as well, have blown some leads. That's just young team things. But Cade's been at the forefront of that, complimentary. So I think whether it's just a backcourt spot or a wild card spot, like, Cade should be in. He's been that good.
23-9-7. It's just him, LeBron, and Nikola Jokic doing that.
That is pretty darn good company to be in. So shout out to Cade. I'm trying to think, is there anybody else worth at least a hat tip on the East front?
For a brief second, I thought you were going to leave Trae Young off.
No, I couldn't get there. I will say, like, because he just hasn't shot well for most of the year. Steve, he's like, oh my God, bro. You mentioned efficiency one more time. But no, workload / playmaking, and it hasn't been all defense level or anything like that. But I am once again banging the drum, like, Trae is generally working on defense. I recognize inherently that bar isn't super high, but compared to what some of the early tape was for him, it's at least worth the I see you. Maybe not give the full bouquet of flowers, but I do see it. And it's just, he gets inside the arc against drop. The floater versus lob thing is just a lot of fun for me to watch when checking out Hawks games. And he's just an insane passer. It's very much still, again, he shot below his level so far this year, but like, he has had a lot of time to make this season. Like, that's part of the NBA Cup run that the Hawks had before Milwaukee ended it. So no, I wasn't going to leave Trae off. I think because of these other good East guards, I don't think it's like a, if we're doing like the track or whatever, it's probably like 95% he's in versus a guarantee, but like, I do just have him firmly in right now. It'd take a good bit for someone to overtake him, I think. Any closing all-star thoughts before we move to the Christmas slate?
No, we can move to the Christmas slate. We'll check back in once some of these returns come in, and the Kai's be very, very mad.
Ah, yes. And now I get to go on my yearly all-star decide what this means and vote accordingly rant. But we will save that for another pod. Let's get into the Christmas slate, though. Just some general what we're excited about in the matchup, etc. First game of the slate will be the San Antonio Spurs taking on the New York Knicks. Worth noting, both teams playing relatively well in December. Spurs 5-4 in December. The Knicks 7-2 in December. The Knicks this month, for cleaning the glass, third in offense, second in defense, second in net rating. Knicks quietly flirted with a top 10 defense. After an interesting start, as they were trying to figure out the cat thing. Again, we've talked a little bit about Mikal defending below his level, et cetera. Knicks defense been perking up for a little bit. But Steve, on a general note, what excites you about this Spurs-Knicks matchup? What are you looking forward to?
It's Victor Wembanyama in the Garden. It's Jalen Brunson against the San Antonio Spurs. You remember what happened last time Jalen Brunson played the San Antonio Spurs?
I think it was a lot of points.
61. So how does each team adjust to that? And they had an overtime thriller. I think for me, it's probably, okay, what's the approach the Knicks want to go with when it comes to Victor Wembanyama? And how they want to handle him? Do they want to go big? Do they want to go wing adjacent? What do they want to do? Do they want to make switching in? Because you got a little bit of different roster as far as we have multiple guys that could, in theory, guard you. Mm-hmm. So do we test that out right from the jump? Where and how do the Knicks look to attack? Is it just, hey, Chris Paul, would you like to boogie against Jalen Brunson? Is it putting Wimby in action? Is it putting other people in action? I'm intrigued by that. I want to see if the Spurs defense can show up, hold up to a degree. But it should be a fun matchup. What about you?
I think you stepped over my primary, or stepped on my primary reason here.
I told you to go first.
No, you no, you good. I wasn't complaining, to be clear. Like, this is very much dunker spot mind mill. It is very much who's guarding Victor Wembanyama and what the Knicks want to do with that. Like, I would guess, as teams have opted a lot for, let's put wing on Wimby. Let's see what you do. I think we just get OG Anunoby on Wimby and Buddy. If that is the matchup, I am excited to see what that looks like. Because I can see a world in which OG, strong as an ox, quick hands, Wimby tries to go into some of these turnarounds, and OG's able to get the strip on the way up and it's going the other way, and it's the Knicks flowing in transition. I also see Victor Wembanyama taking this personally. He's in the Garden. This is the Christmas debut. And Wimby has like a 14-point first quarter, and he's hitting pull-up threes in transition, and it is absurd. That just has a variety of outcomes that excites me. Like, this is one of the best young players, just one of the best players in the league, period, in Victor Wembanyama. This is one of the best defenders and one of the most versatile defenders that we have in the league in OG Anunoby. If those two face off, I think that's going to be a really fun battle.
So are you ready for Karl Anthony Towns to take the matchup to start?
You could. I don't know how well that goes. Though, again, I will give the hat tip to the effort from Kat on that front, which, again, we just got to sped through, like, he's an obvious all-star starter, but, like, that's a pretty big deal that he's an obvious all-star starter. He's been really good, really efficient. But if he takes that matchup, I wonder how quickly San Antonio dips into the inverted bag. Like, let's just have Chris Paul screen for Victor Wembanyama. Let's have Devin Vassell when he comes in. Let's have him screen for Victor Wembanyama. I wonder how New York decides to deal with that. Will that just be a switch? Which, on that front, per second spectrum, as a pick-and-roll screener, nobody has faced more switches than Victor Wembanyama this year. It's 173 for him. It's 164 for John Collins, because Utah just, they switch a lot, and they also see a bunch of switches. 0.99 points per possession for Victor Wembanyama when he sees a switch. That is a higher number than it was earlier this year. And so if this is a thing that he can take off the table, that gets complicated for New York, and league-wide, that gets really tough. Because, like, again, that was like the year one hack. Wing on you, big roam over, et cetera. If Wimby can beat that, good luck to everyone. But yeah, I start with the Wimby matchup.
Okay, where else do you go?
I think beyond that, this Spurs defense outside of Wimby, I think New York can poke at some stuff. I think about, like, San Antonio's tried to switch quite a bit off the ball, and it has been pretty inconsistent for them. And I think about the cutting of New York. Hey, we're setting up Chicago action. You're trying to jump this. Let me just go backdoor real quick. I think Wimby is like a helper is going to be interesting. Obviously, he can do that because of the length that he has. And I said a little bit earlier, he's having a DPOY level season. But I do wonder how much strain he's going to have as a helper. And in general, like, can those guys hold up to everything New York wants to do off ball? I think Jalen Brunson kind of speaks for himself, the type of shot maker that he is. I think the playmaking's gotten better. Like, one of the things that we talked about last season was teams are more willing to put two on the ball against Jalen Brunson. How quickly does he get off of it, et cetera? Like, I do feel like he's looked better against that coverage when he's seen it. I don't know how often the Spurs want to dip into that bag. And if they do, like, how much can Wimby clean up? And more pressing, when Wimby's off the floor, what is that defense going to look like against New York?
I think the big key for New York is going to be defense, which is why I know you mentioned the wing matchup. What if they just said, hey, Kat, you got Wimby, we'll show help and double, we'll rotate behind it, and we'll try and fly around. When the Knicks are able to get stops, they're a different team. I think the offense has spoken for itself this year, but they get stops, they push, they flow, get some easier baskets, get some cutting, get some movement. That should be good. I want to see if the Knicks continue to build on the cutting. I've liked, hey, Kat, we throw it to you. We play off of you. These cuts are live. You'll throw us the ball. We can get some good stuff out of that. If you're San Antonio, you got to try and find a way to keep the Knicks in the half court, and you got to try and find a way to score on the other end pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. But if the Knicks bring their defense, they're a whole different squad. If the Spurs can poke at it, I think we get a ball game.
I like it. I like it. On the Wimby front, has been one of the most efficient post threats in the league this year, has been doubled quite a bit as well. doubled on roughly 16% of his post-ups per second spectrum. So to your point, I guess Wimby does have experience seeing it. And like the passing for him is probably an underrated part of his game at this juncture. I think most people talk about the shot making and the ridiculous blocks that he's able to get to, or some of the deflections he's able to get to. But he is a good passer. Something that I noted was kind of off with the turnovers and stuff earlier this year. But he has the ability, and he's obviously going to have the size to be able to see over the doubles if New York brings them. So that could be a fun battle within the battle. I think overall, like, I'll pose this question to you. Like, what have you seen from the Knicks defense overall over the past couple of weeks? What has encouraged you on that front?
The same thing that encouraged me earlier in the season, when they have the off-ball activity and they're able to contain and enhance their defenders and kind of rotate back out, they're pretty good. When they don't and they can't contain the ball and they don't pressure, they're not as good and they get hit.
All right. Good stuff. Good stuff. Well, to toss you a lob, good sir. But no, all good, all good. But no, as the Knicks defense perks up to this degree and they're, you know, hit a level of consistency on that end. Talked about the offense and the firepower that they have. And Cat has just been efficient pretty much from everywhere. Jalen Brunson able to dominate in the middle of the floor, pull up threes going in, and get to the line as well, get him some easy points there. If Mikhail's knocking down shots, OG's knocking down shots, you get Deuce McBride coming off the bench, he's knocking down pull-ups all over the place. It's a fun two-way group. Like, I think, I guess zooming out, the Knicks probably just have a lot more can come out of the East equity than they did earlier in the season. I do think Boston is still the favorites, provided that they still stay healthy. But like after Boston, Cleveland has certainly earned that second billing, but New York's very good. Milwaukee on this current run, if they weren't in the conversation, they've at the very least butted themselves into that conversation. As teams that could be serious threats to come out of the East. But yeah, it was just interesting seeing New York's offense hum to that degree and the defense couldn't get settled. Now it feels like the defense is actually settling in. So this is a really good two-way squad. Just wanted to give them the hat tip there. Any closing thoughts on Spurs-Knicks before we move?
Nope. Got a whole bunch of matchups to get to, big dog.
That we do. That we do. We will move to the second game in the slate. The Minnesota Timberwolves taking on the Dallas Mavericks. The Wolves, 21st in offense, 5th in defense, 10th in net rating. The Mavs, 4th in offense, 10th in defense, 7th in net rating. Both teams with positive or just winning records in December so far, 5-3 for the Wolves, 6-2 for the Mavs. Though it feels, the vibe is certainly different between those two, despite like the game indifference in those December records. I think for me, it's going to be Luka shot making, Anthony Edwards shot making. Who gets out to the first quarter run, I think is kind of where my eyes start. Because obviously Luka has the ability to just flip any defense on its head. If he gets that step back going, left going early on, he can get the crowd into it and it could get ugly. Conversely, as we've seen in many a games this season for Anthony Edwards, he could just come out and say, nobody on this court can guard me. Congratulations to your run last year. Congratulations to what the series looked like last season. Can you stay in front of me? The answer is no. But that's a nice contest you got there. I'm going to elevate anyway. I'm going to finish at the rim or I'm going to have the mid-range jumper going. And because Ant has been an absurd pull-up three-point shooter so far this year, he also has that he could tap into. So I just kind of wonder between those two, and also Kyrie, as he's also an explosive scorer and has been for a very long time at this point, who starts the surge, I think, is where I go. And then after that, Jaden McDaniels, get ready. It's another Luka versus Jaden matchup. And I think in general, like, who gets the initial Ant assignment and what variety of coverage will he see? Or rather, like, what volume of variety, I guess, is more what I want to say. Because I do think he will see switch, he will see drop. They will sprinkle in, like, if he's run the pick and roll on the sideline, they'll probably try to force it there or send two there. But, like, what do they choose to do the most of with Ant, and how does he handle that?
Do you have any concerns about Anthony Edwards against the Dallas Mavericks showing help on his drives?
A little bit. It's not anything he hasn't seen, but I think in light of the recent, I ain't got nothing for y'all that want me to get to the rim because of all the help that teams are showing, and Dallas is just one of the best teams in the league at that, I would imagine they just double down and say, we dare you. And so I'm concerned about more about like what the actual production is going to be versus his aunt going to be getting stripped because he doesn't see the help or anything like that. Like, I'm not worried about him being surprised by it. I just worry about, will the pull-ups fall if he takes them? If he makes the right play to the corner, will Jaden knock down his corner three? Will Dante have the three ball going, et cetera? So I'd say a little bit.
I mean, I think my mind goes to the defensive end of the floor and to see, can Dallas kind of get back to that blend, that mix where, okay, Rudy, your screens are a drop. If that doesn't work, it can also be a switch if we need that to. Is Julius Randle going to be able to poke at some of the matchups or switches? Is he going to draw help? Is Dallas going to be able to rotate out of that? Will Minnesota be able to play with the kind of tempo they need to in the half court, or will Dallas be able to load up and be active? I think that's going to be a key thing for Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You got to keep pressure on this defense, and you got to make them make multiple efforts. If you let Dallas load up, show help, recover, you're kind of put yourself in a tough spot. Obviously, the shot making from Kyrie, the shot making from Luka, huge. What does that open up against this Minnesota team? How much versatility are you going to have with Rudy as far as coverage goes? How is Julius Randle going to hold up on the weak side? How much switching is he going to do? Mm-hmm. That's probably where my mind goes to at first, because Minnesota's going to have to consistently find the gaps, and Dallas is going to consistently be able to bring the pressure. And I think the other thing for Dallas is, as a unit, they have more movement in the half court now. So it's not just the kind of the pick and roll entree that we've seen before. You got to deal with a lot of different things. So that's kind of where my mind goes. Minnesota's going to have to be ready to attack and score the basketball on this one.
Understood. Like, the Julius Randle on the weak side portion is a really good one from you. Just because, again, Luka is an offense onto himself. And even if you don't plan on putting two on the ball, like, he has a way of generating that kind of attention anyway. And throughout their matchups, even going back to the Utah days, like, we've seen Rudy in the drop. We've also seen him have to kind of creep up to the level and drop back. We've seen the occasional switch from him. When Rudy creeps up, is Julius Randle going to be ready for those low man responsibilities if he's in the corner? Or whoever's in that corner, can you peel in early? Because the fun part for me with Luka, you can have your defense in on time, on target, and because he's 6'8", like, he still can just fire a bullet to the opposite corner before you can recover. Where if you do, it has to be a perfect closeout, or that guy is now attacking. That's the general beauty of this Dallas offense in general. Like, they are just now chock full of guys who can beat closeouts for you. And so, like, that's going to be a very fun game within the game to track in this one. Because I don't anticipate this being a game where, like, Luka's going to see traps. Like, I don't know if Luka has the 9 turnover game because he's unprepared for the ball pressure Minnesota. Like, this is a team that he's seen before. Minnesota has been very good defensively overall this year. And I think they have the best defense in the league this month. So it's going to be an interesting battle there. But those skip passes are going to be fun to track in this one. And I made the note about Anthony Edwards can get off to those fun starts. I think Wolves-Mavs, this is the only game of the Christmas slate that we've actually seen these two teams play before, play each other already. That was back in late October, where Anthony Edwards had 24 points in the first quarter of that game, finishes with 37. But again, he can ignite runs to that degree. So that is going to be a fun one. Any closing thoughts on Wolves Mavs before we head out of here?
Should be a fun one. Did you know this is the fifth straight Christmas Day game for Dallas? And Julius Randle, while he was a Knick, averaged 28 in his last three games on Christmas Day.
Hey, Julius sells up for the big time. I respect it. Like, I do think, obviously not the same level of talent, not perfect one-to-one comparisons, but like, mid-post Julius and the random post-ups for P.J. Washington in this one are going to be kind of fun to kind of mirror in my head when they get him. Because P.J. has shown this year that you put a smaller guy on me, like, I can win this. You can't just bake this in so you can send your help elsewhere. So I think the post-possessions in general are going to be fun. Again, Julius, Luka's obviously going to post up some. We'll get the random guard possession or two for Kyrie if he has a matchup that he likes. And I'd say generally, like, keeping eyes on the second units for both. Like, this could be a Naz Reid, we're going to flip this on his head game. And conversely for Dallas, like, insert a rangy wing here. And just keeping eyes on the front court in general there. So, should be a fun one. Next matchup, the Boston Celtics and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers, 27th in offense, 13th in defense, 24th in net rating. The Celtics 3rd in offense, 9th in defense, 3rd in net rating. Only 149 possessions with Tyrese Maxey, Paul George, and Joel Embiid on the floor so far. Very low sample, but an offensive rating of 102, which would be equivalent to the last ranked team in the league. Washington currently has the worst offense in the league at 104.3, but an 89 defensive rating with those three on the floor. OKC currently first with 104.3. So knocking on wood that we get to see those three play together on Wednesday. I think that's where my intrigue lies, or where it starts, rather. I just want to see the big three play together. I want them to build a larger sample and build more chemistry with each other, because we know what all three of those guys could do individually. Like a Paul George return to form game, or just a loud performance, would be nice to see, as he's been in and out of the lineup, so he's been building a little consistency himself. We've seen the flashes. We know what kind of player he can be, what kind of shot maker he can be, what kind of defender, what kind of playmaker, et cetera. He's going to have to be ramped up for this one because Boston has all of the wings. And I guess on that note, do we see Paul George on Jason Tatum off right? Or are they going to go for one of the role players to take on those assignments so PG can roam? Like, that's going to be an interesting thing that I tracked from the tip off for those first two or three possessions, just what is going to be the ideal role for Paul George in this one. And again, if Joel Embiid is there, will Boston double? Will be the initial question for me. I would assume it's going to be no until we feel like we absolutely have to. And then from there, the fun really begins. What kind of passing game will we get from Joel Embiid? Or will he just score over them anyway? Because this is the kind of post threat that he can be. And then how is Tyrese Maxey fit into that? What is his offensive usage going to be like? And naturally, because he is a smaller guard, I would assume we're going to see a lot of Boston trying to put Tyrese Maxey in action. Here's Jason Tatum as a screener, try to force that switch. How does Philadelphia, who has been surprisingly solid defensively this year, even with Embiid out of the lineup, how do they deal with Boston hunting mismatches to the degree that they do? So I think those would be some of my early thoughts heading into this matchup. What stands out to you about Sixers Celtics?
I mean, for me, it's just let's see what are the Sixers? Let's not look at the record. This is a test game for you. This is Boston. This is why you may or may not have made this move or shifted towards having smaller lineups and more wings around Embiid, space around Embiid. Let's see what that looks like against Boston. Mm-hmm. Now, will I grade it at full grading because, I mean, they haven't played a bunch together? No. But what are you going to try? What can you test out? What can you try and take away? How do you look overall? I think for me, one thing with the Sixers, if you notice when teams are doubling, in the low sample that we've seen, it's Joel Embiid with Tyrese one pass away and Paul George two passes away. Mm. And you can mix and match, obviously, depending on who threw it in. But they put pressure on you because of the spacing of those two. So you don't know who's going to cut towards the open area. You don't know how far that rotation is going to be when you have to close out from the other one. And so how much can they get to that? How does Boston want to treat Tyrese Maxey to start? Are we going to do the deep drop and you got to make some shots until we start to do something? How is Paul George going to be treated by Boston? Is he going to be a switch or is he also going to be a deep drop? Like, you need to make shots, prove to us we need to do something different. Does Boston tap the Drew Holiday, here's Joel Embiid for a little bit button? Do they mix and match? How do they handle that? What does Philly try and attack and open up? If I'm Tyrese Maxey, you got to know they're going to put you in action quite a few times, the Boston Celtics. Are you willing to switch? Are you going to show and recover? Can Philadelphia rotate behind it? Does the fact that Philadelphia has more, in theory, wings help out to where, hey, we can at least switch with these three? And now Tyrese, you show and recover. Joel, you stay in a deep drop. We'll do late switches. We'll kick you out, whatever we got to do. Does that work against Boston? Does that have upside? So I think for me, it's trying to see how much Philly has. And it's Boston. I mean, they're a machine. So what do they try to do is where my intrigue goes. Where do they try and attack? How do they try and go consistently? How do they handle the switches? I think it's not something every team can hit, but we've seen there are times where that can bog them down. It's not nearly to the degree, narrative-wise, it's been all year. But let's see how you handle some of that in this portion of the program.
Boston currently second best offense against switches so far this year. Cleveland, the only team that is ahead on that front. I do think, to your point, with Embiid in the deeper drop, like, I wonder how much they ask him to do scheme-wise. Philly does. Because obviously Boston's going to try to put a level of pressure on him. They're going to be attacking other players, but Embiid's going to be involved to some degree. How deep will the drop be? Will they be willing to bring him up to the level? Will they be willing to switch Joel Embiid on some occasions? And just from a matchup perspective.
Embiid's been going with a lot of late switch, just FYI.
Yeah, good stuff. like Boston does pose a different challenge in terms of the players they can put out there. So like, how much do they tap that button? And matchup wise, is it going to be straightforward for Philly, or do we see any, we are putting Joel Embiid on Drew to try to keep you near the basket? Like, how much does Philly try to play around with that? And if they do that, where does Boston go? Do they immediately say, hey, we're going to work to take that off the table? We're going to prove that this isn't going to be a viable strategy for you. Do they flow with their offense elsewhere? Like, those are things that generally intrigue me in this one. And I think naturally with Boston, you mentioned the switch point. How quickly would they work to attack whatever switching that they see? Even if they find the right answer, if they take 8 seconds to get into it, that does help Philly load up a little bit more than they should be able to against a Boston team with this much talent. So that is going to be fun to track for me. See, one of the things I would be intrigued by, I wish Jarrett McCain was playing in this game, thing out indefinitely with the meniscus tear. I think he announced on his own YouTube channel that he's out for the year. So that just stinks. Like, I would have loved to have seen him running around, in a literal sense, just running around. Like, he's been one of the fun, I'll run this pick and roll. I don't have it. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to relocate over here. Let's see if you follow me. If you don't, then I just have a jumper. He's been very active without the ball in his hands. So if you do see switching, like, that would have been a really fun test for him to see this level of switching, to see these kind of perimeter defenders that Boston has, and to see how the Rook would do about it. So, like, that just kind of stinks from a basketball perspective. And obviously, you just don't want anyone to get hurt. And he has been one of the more consistent bright spots for Philly in light of all the injuries that they face. So it does just kind of stink that he's not going to be able to partake in this one. But should be an interesting test for both. Like, this should be a good matchup. Did you have any closing thoughts on Philly-Boston?
What else can Philadelphia generate outside of the Maxi? You know, are the wings going to be able to drive and make shots? It's a Kelly Oubre game. It's a Ricky Council game. Like, who steps up to the plate for them in those areas? That's probably where I'm intrigued on more than anything. Just want to see what Philly has.
Understood. All right, let's move into the final two games of the slate. First up, we have the Los Angeles Lakers taking on the Golden State Warriors. So far this year, the Lakers 16th in offense, 18th in defense, 19th in net rating. The Warriors 19th in offense, 8th in defense, 13th in net rating. 5-4 in December for the Los Angeles Lakers, where the defense has really perked up. The offense has slid among some of the lineup changes that the Lakers have made this month. The Warriors 3-5 in December, 27th in offense, 20th in defense. They cannot live in an ecosystem where both of those things slide at the same time. But heading into this matchup, it's Bron and Steph first and foremost. These are just two pillars of our sport. And so anytime you can get the healthy version of both, my eyes will be on the television, especially on a stage like this. So just a general, this is really cool, and I hope they both play well and they come out of this game healthy. Beyond that, I want to see how aggressive Golden State's defense is going to be in this one. Because on one hand, because of some of the shooting that the Lakers will have in their lineups, derogatory, this does provide a platform for Golden State to kind of ramp up their help and ramp up some of the doubles that they may want to send. Like, this has been a team that has been willing to send two in a variety of ways so far this year. They have help points that should open that up. On the other hand, if the guy in the mid post is LeBron James, he can pick that apart. And so I'm curious on a general level, like, what level of aggressiveness we'll see from Golden State's defense in this one. Can the Lakers take advantage of any kind of over aggressiveness for Golden State? I think for both teams, they want to get out and run. They want to get the easy stuff in transition. Like, that's a very basic basketball tenet. But for Golden State in particular, they absolutely want to force a bunch of turnovers. Like, this is part of why they had so much speed on the roster. Some of that's been dinged by injury. But in general, we can pressure you. We can fly around. We can force you into uncomfortable spots, wild passes, and now we're out and running. And now your job is to try to find Stephen Curry in a foot race. And that may just open up easier baskets elsewhere for us. So, like, I think that half-court battle is going to be interesting. Whenever we see it, Draymond Green defending Anthony Davis, that has always been a fun one. We have seen Draymond say, you're not scoring on me. You're not going to have a good time. We have also seen Anthony Davis say, I am bigger than you at the end of the day, and I can get these buckets, and I can get you in foul trouble. Which version of that are we going to see in this game? I think it's going to be an interesting one. I think those would probably be the base thoughts for me. What pops for you so in this matchup.
Can the Lakers keep up the connectivity on defense that they've displayed of late to where, hey, we can mix in our switches, we can show help, we can recover, but we're not going to beat ourselves as much as we were earlier in the season. Mm-hmm. Can they find that groove against Golden State? What buttons does Golden State want to hit? Obviously, injuries plus a new player makes it a little interesting. But what do they want to tap? How do they want to make the Lakers move? How do they want to attack them? How often does Steph Curry get put in action? How often do Lakers try and attack the Warriors' size to a degree based on some of the lineups they may have out there? Mm-hmm. And to what you said, how do the Warriors react to it? I think for Golden State, this is one of those games where you have to be in high gear offensively. Yeah, make the Lakers move, make them defend multiple actions, make them help, make them recover. If you let them be comfortable in that shell, be physical off ball with Max Christie running around, AD lurking, you know, Rui and LeBron as helpers, it gets a little trickier to consistently beat the Lakers defense. But if you can get them kind of in scramble scenarios, scramble situations, you kind of open things up. And that's just overall good for the Warriors offense anyway. So that's probably where my mind is going. Can the Lakers defense hold up? And then, you know, what version of the Warriors are we going to see? Are they, I don't want to say they're working or trying to find their identity, but I think they are trying to find a level of comfort in it. So I'm intrigued to see if they can get there.
Yeah, like I wonder, there is a basic who starts for Golden State question that I have bubbling in my head, just because they have changed their lineups quite a bit. We've seen Draymond start. We've seen him go off the bench. We've seen the guards kind of move around. Good note for you, like, this is going to be the Dennis Schroeder revenge game. So, like, which version of him do we get? What do the Steph plus Schroeder lineups look like if we get them? And because of the lack of size in that backcourt, does that feed LeBron two options now to say, hey, I can have your guy screen for me. Let's see what you want to do. And to the Steph point, pulled this up very quickly on Second Spectrum. This is the highest rate of screens that Steph has had to defend as the screener defender per Second Spectrum, roughly 11 per 100 possessions. 1.09 points per possession on any trip featuring Steph defending a pick and roll as a screener, which generally, hey, ball handler, hey, Steph, you come here. Do you want to switch? Do you want to show and recover, et cetera? This has been very fruitful for opposing offenses. So to the Laker point, are they able to get some juice out of that? With LeBron as a ball handler, will you force Golden State to send an extra defender? If it's two on the ball, I mean, if it's show and recover, it's going to be two on the ball anyway. That's going to open up some stuff for the Lakers to play with there. Like, I feel like this is going to be a pretty big Max Christie game, assuming that Steph gets that matchup and Max Christie is going to be used as a screener, as he has been during this recent stretch. It's going to be a fun cat and mouse game there. I'm trying to think. We got Bron, we got AD, we got Draymond, we got Steph.
Wiggins time?
I was about to say, the Warriors wings versus the Lakers wings is going to be interesting. Yeah, we get all-star Andrew Wiggins, headband Austin Reeves on Christmas Day. So, I mean, hey. Should be interesting. But no, to your point, like I would like to see Golden State kind of recapture their formula from earlier in the year. Because this was a very speedy and aggressive bunch defensively. And that was a hallmark for them. As they're working things out offensively, they were shooting the leather off the ball. Splits were working in the half court, etc. It's been a really wonky month for them. And to that point, I also wonder, I guess on the Steph point, naturally superstar there, I want to see him knock down crazy shots. I wonder how aggressive he's going to be early on in this one. Will this be a use my gravity to start and let these other guys get going? Because I can always find and poke at my, you know, pick my spots, et cetera. Or is Steph going to come out gunning to try to set a tone here? So that'd be a fun one for me to track at the very least. Any closing thoughts or questions heading into this
one? I mean, I think it just kind of continues the trend. I do like that we are getting a lot of first-time matchups between these teams this season. So that'll be fun to kind of see how they look against each other. But no, none really. I mean, I think there's an opportunity for some Warrior wings to drive and finish and attack. I think the Lakers with their lineups, it's a D'Angelo Russell game. It's a Rui game. And who tilts it for them?
Also a D'Angelo Russell revenge game. There we go.
Yeah. So it should be a fun one.
There we go. The current 6 and 7 seeds in the West. So not quite a play-in matchup between the two, but close enough to where it maybe could be from a month from now or getting close to the end of the season. So important to see what these teams look like in their first matchup together. And we can close this out. The nightcap, the Denver Nuggets the Phoenix Suns. The Nuggets on the gear, 6th in offense, 15th in defense, 9th in net rating. The Suns, 8th in offense, 25th in defense after a strong start to the year, 16th in net rating. The Nuggets, 5-4 in December. The Suns, 3-5 in December. It starts with Jokic for me. How aggressive is he going to be to start as a scorer? He's been getting all of the buckets this year. And so I'm inclined to believe this is going to be feed me early, especially in light of what the big man production for Phoenix has been so far this year. And as such, is Phoenix sending doubles? Are they trying to double him on the catch? Are they showing help and trying to get him on the move? Jokic has seen all of it, but just stylistically, what is Phoenix going to try to go with on this front? And then defensively, Phoenix is going to put Nikola Jokic in action. How well is Nikola Jokic going to hold up? How well is the back line behind him going to hold up? This has been a very pick and roll heavy offense for Phoenix. They have perked it up under Mike Budenholzer this year. There's room for Bradley Beal. There's room for Devin Booker. There's room for Kevin Durant. How well will Denver's defense hold up in this one? Because we know they need that part to be to a certain level to where the offense really pops. If we can get stops, Denver has run out in transition more than they did last year. They get some easy ones. But if nothing else, let's get a stop. We can slow this down. Now we can get to the half court bag. We can kind of control the tempo of this game. So very important defense game. And I think that is going to start with Jokic. Is he going to be in a drop? What does it look like? If he's at the level, how much is he impacting the ball when he's up there? How early is the back line peeled in to try to dissuade some of those easier shot opportunities for Phoenix? I think that's where I start.
I think it's a defense for both ends, for both teams. And I don't even know if it's just Jokic. I think for Denver, this is a team where we know when they're humming, they are rotating on defense. Their help is in early. They're flying around, making multiple closeouts. When they are off, they're walking in to help. Now they're trying to get back out, can't contain the drive, getting beat there. Now you're having to make multiple efforts in ways you didn't necessarily anticipate. And Phoenix has the kind of movement and players to keep that kind of pressure on you. So they're going to have to be able to defend not just in pick and roll, but outside of the first play. Mm-hmm. What's your recovery look like? How's your help defense? What are your closeouts looking like? That's what Phoenix can do. On the flip side, we've seen Phoenix, especially recently against Detroit. They were there defensively, but they didn't. You didn't feel them. Drives were made. No effort. You know what I mean? Pick and roll was open. Bodies, you were physical until you weren't. They can't have that kind of defense performance against Denver. I know Denver's been a little bit up and down at times offensively, but with the cutting, with Jokic, with the pace and the tempo and the flow they can get to, I'd recommend the Suns bring a little bit more to the defensive table than they have. I think this is a game for them to kind of test and see what we've done. I think KD's been done some really good things on the weak side as a defender. Can they kind of get a more consistent effort as a squad to where they're not just in their help spots and Nurk's dropping back and now a lob is open because the corner was empty? So everyone did their job, except it still gave something up.
Got tough, yeah.
Because you have to deal with not just Jokic, but Murray, Russell Westbrook playing with energy, and the list goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So that stands out to me. I think for Phoenix, you know, they're another team where if their defense is at a certain level, their offense kind of just pops. You know, we've seen the flow, we've seen the movement, we see them improve. Obviously, you know, injuries have made the lineups a little interesting, but you still got to deal with Kevin Durant. I think Tyus Jones has been very solid all year long as far as being able to play on ball and off ball, mix in shots. Royce O'Neal has been good. I have alternated between, hey, Royce O'Neal's doing a lot, and hey, this is a lot you're asking from Royce O'Neal. But that's kind of what you kind of have to holistically build in some of these absences. So if he's going to be someone who can drive and kick, and now you open something up for Bradley Beal, et cetera, it's good stuff. Very ironic. These two teams will play Monday, December 23rd. Before they play on Christmas. So I figure you should get pretty annoyed by that, Nikias.
I am.
Your questions will be answered.
Yeah. Yeah. Darn. It'd be like that, but that's okay. So we will at the very least get a little bit of a taste of the matchup before we see it on Wednesday. I think to your offense versatility point, like very important that you could have other guys operate with the ball in their hands like Royce has, and who has also just shot the leather off the ball to where now you get the full breadth of, hey, that's Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and Kevin Durant off the ball, and you don't know who's screening for each other and who's moving off ball and who's relocating, who's taking the handoff from Royce O'Neal. Do we actually want to switch this because we are hiding one of our worst defenders on Royce? oh, this is a switch. Wait, that's a matchup that they want. Do we need to send help? And now you still have the other two stars off the ball to where you can't even help around that the way that you want to. Like, Phoenix can really put you in some tough spots. But to your point, defense certainly has to hold up. I think if this is a close game late, I'm really intrigued to see how both of these teams close. Because this doesn't feel like a game where Phoenix can afford to close small, considering Nikola Jokic exists.
Oh, well, the answer is Mason Plumlee.
Could be.
Would it not be?
Well, like, that's probably it. But I was about to say, because, like, related to that, you probably don't want to do that. Also, if Denver is closing with Russ, who has, as you've noted on the pod many times, and in our watch parties, come to the watch parties, about the growing chemistry with Russ and Jokic. Russ has just done important things for Denver. Has made some important hustle plays for them just throughout this season for them. If you close with him, that does then open up the ability to say, hey, we can actually have a center on the floor. You just guard Russ. And we can hack it that way. And then we have at least some element of size for Jokic on the other end. Though, again, he's Jokic, so he should still win the matchup anyway. But you at least have the bigger body out there. So I'm curious to see what the closing lineups for both is going to look like here. Or if we're going to see some interesting, like, offense-defense subs / timeouts late in this one to kind of poke at different things. It could be fun, especially since they're going to see each other again in a couple of days. So that part intrigues me as well.
Could be a 20-point win.
In which we don't get the answer to that. And it would be very funny if, like, kind of recording on a Monday morning, but, like, Monday's blowout for Phoenix and then Wednesday's a blowout for Denver. And it's like, well, okay, we've learned very little in this matchup in light of, like, late game stuff. So we'll see. That would also annoy me. But we will see. We will see. Any closing Christmas game thoughts before we head?
No.
Okay. I would just say, a Thunder, we see you. That would be my closing Christmas Day thought.
Actually, no. Let me ask this question. I forgot. We played the game last year. I didn't play it this year. So would you flex anyone into this schedule, into this slate? The home teams have to stay.
If the home teams have to stay, frankly, the Thunder would need to take either the Wolves or the Lakers spot for me. They've just been too good not to get a Christmas Day game.
Oh, okay, so you're taking LeBron James off of the Christmas Day slate.
It's either the Lakers, who are currently in the play-in, or it is the Wolves, who haven't been as good as they were last year at the very least. And, like, I think Shea is better than Ant. Not that they can't flip, but, like, you're at least still getting young star guard in this matchup. And the Thunder have just been the best team in the, like, the Thunder have to be on the Christmas Day slate. So if we have the, again, keep the home teams as home, you know, if we're keeping that, it's the Wolves or the Lakers.
Bro, Philadelphia's right there.
Oh, you know what? They are on the... That's true. That is true. I had it in my mind it was in Philly. My brain got crossed. So I was trying... And then on top of that, it's just like trying to keep the West-West thing. So, like, yeah, to that degree, like, the Sixers haven't been good. Like, their three are there now, so I would want to see it. But, like, Thunder Celtics as a finals preview would be... Potential finals preview, I should say. But, that's probably just the answer. Honestly, but if we're sticking with West-West, then, like, yeah, it's the Wolves or the Lakers just have to be upset this year because the Thunder have just been that good.
All right. So if you could put one team in, you put OKC in over Milwaukee?
Yeah, I would. I would. Like, in an ideal world, it is, again, the Thunder replace one of the Wolves or the Lakers, and then the Bucks replace the Sixers. But I would imagine probably Bucks fans don't want to see Celtics Bucks on Christmas.
Probably not. What was the Western Conference Finals last year, Nikos?
Oh, Lord. I think that would be the Dallas Mavericks and the Minnesota Timberwolves.
So they had a chance to get on there.
Conversely, the Wolves had a chance to beat the Dallas Mavericks. As did the Thunder. But
last year I asked who would be more likely to make it this year, Wolves, Thunder, or Spurs? And two out of the three made it.
They did. They sure did.
I'm going to remix it for you this year.
Okay.
More likely to get into Christmas Day next year, Cavs, Thunder, or the Rockets?
More likely to get in, I think it's the Thunder.
Here's the tricky part.
What's up?
Where are they going to get in, though? You're going to need Phoenix to be bad. Look, New York is locked in. Mm-hmm. You think Wimby getting out of here? Nope.
He's not.
LeBron, Steph, that's four. Luka in there. Boston, that's six. Jokic is in there, seven. You're going to need Phoenix to get bad. Milwaukee going to be back next year. That's eight. Hey, bruv. Gets kind of tight.
Hey, yo, Minnie.
All right, Minnesota better have a good performance. So they're going to get the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of tough. Like, hey, we might just get Memphis next year.
We might never see Memphis on Christmas Day again. Darn. Do you not remember that game?
I don't want to remember that game.
Love Memphis, but I know they are mad at them.
I understand. But yeah, it's just a tough draw for the Thunder. But I'm sure they'll take the time off, you know, spend with the families, open Christmas gifts if they celebrate, etc. But either way, just more family time, a little bit of rest for everyone plays the day after. So, you know,
we shall see. Can I make you mad?
Sure.
You're saying all this more time. They played Indiana on Thursday at Indiana.
Well,
time to travel.
Hashtag sucks. Darn.
Sucks. They play on Christmas stinks the day after. Hey, man. Anyways.
That'll do. Well, then, just to quickly close things out. Speaking of the Thunder and Alex Caruso agreeing to a four-year, $81 million extension. Caruso averaging 6-3-2 with roughly 2 steals per game and 20 minutes off the bench so far this season. Defense has been great. Shot making, not so much, but valuable use as a screener, a cutter, and we know what he does defensively. So locking in the money. You trade Josh Giddey, you get Alex Caruso, you lock him in for roughly $20 million per. I haven't seen the details on like if it's an escalating or a de-escalating deal or anything like that, but that seems like a pretty good bit of business for OKC. Landry Shamet back with the New York Knicks and Mo Wagner in Orlando as if they could afford even more injuries. Mo Wagner with a torn ACL. He is out for the year. Mo Wagner was averaging a career high 12.9 points per game, 65% on twos, 36% on threes, 72 from the line, 5 boards, an assist, and a steal in roughly 19 minutes per game. So get well soon, Mo Wagner. That concludes the news. Before we get out of here, Steve, any closing basketball thoughts or questions or free throws or anything of the sort?
How funny that Giannis is just genuinely mad that they're not on the Christmas Day slate.
I mean, hey, he takes pride in that. I understand. That's a darn MVP and Defensive Player of the Year and champion. I understand. Though they did get national love by winning the Emirates NBA Cup.
They sure did. I have a question for you, Mikai.
What's up?
Who has lost more home games, the New Orleans Pelicans or the Sacramento Kings?
Who has lost more? Have they lost the same amount of games?
Correct.
Ah! Which also, that's kind of tough for Sacramento. Again, I've said on the pod before, Mike Brown just does not seem pleased with where his team is right now. And have you seen their rotation as of late? I know you have because like you're watching games, et cetera. But like, they're pretty much just playing like 7 or 8 at this point. That brother wants to rack up some wins. He understands how tough the Western Conference is. And the Kings just will not cooperate. It is remains wild to me that, hey, we were really good late in games. We are adding DeMar DeRozan without giving up a true core piece. And then they just lose all the clutch games. Like, it just doesn't. Speaks to how fickle that time of game is, but like, darn. But it's December 23rd as we're recording, so like, it wouldn't take long for the Kings to win. They aren't that far removed from like a 3-game winning streak. So they could, in theory, just win like 4 of the next 5 or something like that, and then they're just right back in and they feel better. But it's been a really weird Kings year. We'll say that.
Do you have any free throws?
Not today.
What's your favorite holiday movie?
Ooh, my favorite holiday movie. Darn, what is my favorite holiday movie? Do I have a favorite holiday movie? You know what? Favorite holiday movie is probably the SpongeBob Christmas movie, the original one.
That's so.
This Christmas feels like the very first Christmas to me. I'll tell you what. Hey, listen. Shout out Mr. Krabs hitting the high note. You know what I mean? That'll do.
This is so incredibly on brand.
It is.
But we'll end on that note.
Warm fuzzies to close things out. But thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. Apple, Spotify, RIP, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. And naturally, every Tuesday, the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday, we are on this here YouTube channel, the Young Man 3 channel, formerly the JJ Reddit YouTube channel. So subscribe if you haven't already. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. You are not allowed to follow Steve, apparently, but you can see posts if you look hard enough. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link to the room is in the description. We've had some new people trickle in. Hello, hope you're enjoying yourselves. But if you have a League Pass subscription, you can watch games alongside us live. We also sprinkle in some play breakdowns if anything is interesting to us. Random video game things are popped up in the room as well. The new Marvel game was on stream yesterday. College Football 25, as we have the Dunker Dynasty, etc. Some 2K things sprinkled in, some Fall Guys, some Fortnite. It gets random. We have a good time in there. So sign up. It's free to create your profile. No shenanigans. Come rock with us. And with that, happy holidays once again. And we will catch y'all later.
Wait, the Dallas Wings have named Chris Kokalanis head coach.